Let's move on then to our next speaker. Dr. Redden is going to speak to us about correcting anemia, improving renal and cardiovascular outcomes. Dr. Redden.
Thank you very much. I'd like to thank Orthobiotech for the opportunity. I'd also like to let you know that I haven't heard any news from Ajay yet, but we're all hoping for the best. So my task today is to talk about the what we know about treating anemia and chronic kidney disease and its effect on clinical outcomes. Really, so far, I think the most important point to make at the outset is that the data that's currently available as to hard clinical outcomes following anemia correction in patients with chronic kidney disease is quite sparse. Here we've a list of a number of areas in which there is at least some data. We know from multiple retrospective analyses that there is quite a significant association between mortality and anemia in chronic kidney disease and in ESRD. The most recent data from Al Collins showing an association between different levels of anemia and mortality is important. When he looked at USRDS data and grouped patients by cohort of anemia into hematocrits less than 30 to 33, 33 to 36, and 36 and above, when he compared patients with hematocrits over 36 with those with hematocrits less than 36, he was able to show a significant association with a reduction in hospitalization and also a reduction in costs. There was a 16% reduction in hospitalization rate in patients with hematocrits over 36 when compared with patients with hematocrits less than 36, and an 8% reduction in costs. There was no significant difference in mortality between the two groups. Again, it's important to point out that this, like pretty much all the data with respect to all of these clinical outcomes, is retrospective data. With regard to reduction in cardiovascular disease, there's very little data as to the effect of anemia correction on ischemic heart disease. There are two small studies with regard to left ventricular hypertrophy that Dr. Alamad already mentioned, and I'll go into a little bit in detail later. With regard to improvement in well-being, I think this is really where we have the best data. There's pretty conclusive evidence in the CKD population and also in other spheres of medicine, such as oncology, that anemia correction really does improve quality of life. I think the best data in this area in chronic kidney disease is from Ravicki's study, which looked at 85 patients with chronic kidney disease in a randomized controlled trial, and they were able to demonstrate significant improvement in physical activity and also in cognitive function in patients with chronic kidney disease. There are two or three other very good studies that show an improvement in cognitive function with anemia correction in chronic kidney disease. And this is also consistent with data showing EPO receptors in the brain, which may suggest that EPO may have other effects other than the anemia benefit. There's ESRD data showing improvements in sleep patterns and also some anecdotal data in the CKD population. And in addition to the data from Al Collins that showed an association with reduced hospitalizations in this population from anemia correction, there's also other data from Neil Poe which shows pretty much the same thing. Again, retrospective data. And this renal pause, Ajay put that in there, so I have to explain it. And there's also anecdotal data to suggest that female patients with chronic kidney disease who have menstrual abnormalities, sometimes those menstrual abnormalities can improve with correction of anemia. So how about the prevalence of cardiac disease in patients with renal failure? This data is from Pat Parfrey and looks at an incident ESRD cohort of 432 patients. The most important statistic here is that only 16% of these patients had normal echocardiograms at the time of initiation of hemodialysis. 41% of the patients had concentric LVH, 27% had LV dilatation, and 16% had evidence of systolic dysfunction. ADHERE 11 has similar data looking at a chronic kidney disease population, GFR is less than 25, and she demonstrated a prevalence of concentric left ventricular hypertrophy of 25% in that population. As to coronary artery disease, there are numerous small series looking at the prevalence of coronary artery disease in patients before they start dialysis, again showing an increase in prevalence relative to normal patients. As Dr. Parfrey pointed out, this could just very well be a surrogate for the fact that these patients are generally sick and have a lot of comorbidities, and it's difficult to ascertain whether the renal failure itself is the cause of the increase in coronary artery disease. This is a small study by Greaves looking at the predictors of left ventricular hypertrophy. This is a study from the mid-90s that looked at echocardiographic data on 181 patients at various different levels of renal insufficiency. 38 patients had chronic renal insufficiency. Approximately 50 patients were on dialysis and 40 patients had peritoneal dialysis. There were also a number of control patients in the group as well. And when patients with chronic renal insufficiency were compared with patients who were normal controls, there was a significant increase in left ventricular mass index. There was also an increase in left ventricular mass index in the patients who were receiving renal replacement therapy relative to the controls. And within the CKD population, the various factors that were found to be associated with LVH included anemia, hypertension, and diabetes. When we look at the mortality risk associated with having various left ventricular geometric abnormalities, this is the same cohort that Pat Parfrey, the earlier slide I presented with the pie chart showing the various prevalence of left ventricular geometric abnormalities in an incident ESRD cohort. Of these 432 patients, when you divided the patients into the various different levels of cardiac abnormalities, normal, cardiac geometry, concentric LVH, LV dilatation, and systolic dysfunction, you can see that patients with echocardiographic abnormalities had significantly increased mortality compared to patients that had normal echoes. This is one of the two studies that Dr. Alamad mentioned earlier. This is Portolis's paper. Again, these two studies, just to reinforce it, this study has 11 patients, the next one will have 16 patients, no control groups, and neither study was a randomized controlled trial, obviously, and so they weren't powered. So I think really we have to take all of this data as purely hypothesis generating. Just to summarize quickly, the Portolis data show that in patients who were treated for 6 months with anemia correction, LV mass index showed a significant reduction, cardiac output showed a significant reduction, and total peripheral resistance showed a significant increase. This is the Hayashi paper. When these patients were treated for 12 months, at 4 months, there was a trend but not a significant difference in LV mass index. At 12 months, there was a significant decrease in LV mass index with anemia correction. Again, 16 patients in this study, so it really is just hypothesis generating. We, as Dr. Parfrey pointed out, there are a number of studies ongoing that should help to answer this question. And we also hope to answer this question with the CHOIR study, as we're planning to do a sub-study of 300 patients that will hopefully answer this question once and for all as to whether anemia correction improves LV mass index. So now on to the CHOIR study. Before going into the CHOIR study, I just wanted to acknowledge the energy and enthusiasm of our current RPA president, Bill Owen, in getting this going, and also the hard work by Ajay and Lily Tran from Orthobiotech with regard to getting the study going. I think we're all excited. It's about to start enrolling patients in the next few days, actually. So this is quite an exciting time for us. The hypothesis underlying the CHOIR study is that the level of anemia correction with once-weekly dosing of recombinant EPO in patients with chronic kidney disease will decrease mortality and cardiovascular morbidity. This is a randomized controlled trial. It's an open-label study, 150 sites, 4 years duration, 2,000 patients. The study population includes patients with hemoglobins less than 11, age greater than 18 years, and a steady-state GFR between 15 and 50 mils per minute. Now, I think, as Dr. McClellan's data pointed out earlier, we expect that the majority of the patients with hemoglobins less than 11 will have GFRs probably 30 and below, but we are including patients up to a GFR of 50. The study will involve treatments in two separate arms. One arm will involve therapy directed to achieve a hemoglobin of 13 to 13.5 grams per deciliter. And this will involve EPO therapy once weekly to this target, with doses adjusted accordingly. The lower arm will involve therapy directed to maintain a hemoglobin of 10.5 to 11 grams per deciliter. Again, this will involve once weekly therapy adjusted accordingly to that target. The study timetable will involve 1 year for patient accrual, 36 months for patient intervention. Patients who initiate renal replacement therapy will be discontinued from the study at the time of initiation of renal replacement therapy. And phase three, the closeout phase of the study, will take about 3 months after intervention has been completed in all of the patients. Primary outcome of this study includes mortality, myocardial infarction, stroke, and CHF hospitalization. Obviously, when you design a study like this, the most important outcome is mortality. The reason we have a composite outcome is primarily for power reasons. These latter three components of the primary outcome will be adjudicated by an independent clinical events committee. And what that means is that every time an event is suspected on site, a folder will be sent for evaluation at the clinical research organization level, and then the event will be evaluated by an independent committee of physicians who will then determine whether, based on very strict criteria, whether an event has taken place or not. And this adds an awful lot of objectivity to these endpoints and really hardens them up, as this is an important study and we need hard clinical outcomes in order to make it worthwhile. Secondary outcomes will include each of the components of the primary individually, and will also include hospitalizations, renal function, nutrition, and quality of life. With respect to renal function, as you know, there is some data that suggests that perhaps anemia correction in this population may delay the progression of renal disease. I think this is one of the components of the study that we truly have equipoise on, as there is evidence on both sides of that fence. So there's evidence that suggests possibly that anemia correction may slow the progression, and there's also little weaker evidence that it may actually hasten the progression. So I think this is another opportunity this study gives us to answer hard clinical outcomes. We also look at nutrition and quality of life. We exclude patients with uncontrolled hypertension. We also exclude patients with iron overload. And we also exclude patients with unstable angina pectoris or angina at rest. This is primarily to avoid some of the problems that we think may have taken place in the other large normalization of hematocrit study in ESRD patients, where we think by excluding patients with unstable angina pectoris or angina at rest, we may exclude some of the very high-risk patients and therefore not compromise our outcomes. We exclude patients with refractory iron deficiency anemia. And we also recommend within the protocol that patients are maintained in an iron-replete state using appropriate iron repletion with either oral or IV iron therapy. Patients are also excluded from the study if they're currently receiving recombinant erythropoietin or if they've received it within 3 months of study entry. So in conclusion, I think we can say that the CKD population, like the ESRD population, is probably susceptible to a significant increase in cardiovascular risk. Modifying the chronic kidney disease risk factor of anemia, as well as other risk factors, as some of the other speakers have pointed out, may possibly improve outcomes. And we think the CHOIR study will help to answer a lot of the unanswered questions in this population by focusing on hard clinical outcomes in an important way to answer these questions. Thank you very much.